Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Overnight America continues for one more hour. And Stephen Kinsner, man, what an interview there. The CIA's mind control experimentation with LSD and the unknown man that led it, Sidney Gottlieb. Wow. You can go listen to that podcast by going to KMOX.com/ONA. We have it posted now for you to check out on there. And I also want to let you know you can call in at 436-7900. That's a call or text line that both works the same. You're in the 314 area code. Or maybe you're somewhere else. You're somewhere in America, in dreamland. Who knows? You're just about to fall asleep, and then all of a sudden, boom, you hear something you like, and you're wide awake, and you can't help but call 800-925-1120. A couple of stories, and we've done this topic before. It's been a while. But has anyone had any encounter with a psychic? As in, you would call a psychic helpline, you walked into one of those little doors that say fortune-telling, and we're going to do the cards, so we'll have the crystal ball, or we'll read your palms, or something like that. Or maybe you've spent a lot of money, knowing that there was someone out there that can try to communicate with the dead. Now, have you ever tried that? I'm curious if you have. Tell me your experience. It's 436-7900 or 800-925-1120, because there's a Florida woman who's going to be going to jail for a long time, 40 months in federal prison, because of her scamming someone out of over $1 million claiming to be a psychic. So the Florida woman who claimed to be a psychic healer and had a direct line to God, she said, was sentenced to more than 3 years in that federal prison, swindling this woman. So it started, her name is Sherry Uwanwich, 29 years old, and was a proclaimed gypsy healer. I didn't know there was a different classification. I thought there was just your one standard psychic, which was you come in here, we'll read the cards, or we'll read your palm, or I'll read the magic ball, or I'll, you know, do this thing where I put two fingers up to the temple of my head and I'll pretend I'm thinking really hard, and, you know, we'll make a little noise in the background. And then you have the magic that you would be able to tell someone's future or whatever, the past, or who knows, communicate with someone that's no longer here. And I thought that was it. But I didn't realize there was such thing as a gypsy, someone that would be like a different classification, a gypsy healer. So you can go in and a psychic has healing powers for you. Located in Fort Lauderdale, investigators caught up. Well, she was frauding this person back in 2007. So she sold her services under the name Jacqueline Miller. And you want to know what kind of scam we're talking about? She found someone at a mall, and originally she was working as a low-income fortune teller at certain locations when she was starting at 17 years old. Struck up a conversation with a woman who was from another country, from Brazil, and she said she was a spiritual counselor. She should come into her little shop. I'll read your whatever. So the person takes her up on it, and that's how they got the person hooked. So what happened after that? Well, they came in and she said, oh, this is some bad news. Oh, I got some bad news for you. You're cursed. Ooh, hate to break it to you. Oh, man, I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this news, but your mom cursed you, and the only way you could get that curse off of you is to pay me. Not a one-time fee, you know, continuously pay me, because the ability to take this curse off is only temporary, you see. So you need to keep coming back and keep spending money with me, because if you don't and I stop my little voodoo magic on you, then the curse just goes right back on. So in the end, the lawsuit says she ended up over, what is it, 10 years or something like that? Gave up $1.6 million over that course of time. And she had to give up cash. For example, she took out extra student loans. She loaned other money because she was so scared that this curse was going to just take over. She earned money as a stripper, okay? gift cards, clothing, leased automobiles, and money she borrowed from friends and family, and later even some inheritance money from her father who died. Hundreds of thousands of dollars from her father. Now, you're scratching your head and you're thinking, how can you get $1.6 million out of stripper money? Mostly, I'm going to guess it's inheritance. I'm going to guess the inheritance played a big part of that. So back in 2014, the friendship started to fall because this so-and-so gypsy psychic came clean and said, I can't do this anymore. I've taken too much of your money. This is all a fraud. I'm not actually doing anything. And lo and behold, she was taken back. What do you mean? $1.6 million later, what do you mean this was all for nothing? So she gets a little worried, but the gypsy fortune teller says, don't worry, I'll pay you back. You want to guess if she paid her back? No. We've kept this in a side account. We haven't touched it. It's in crude. We actually have interest. No, of course she wasn't. She was never had the intention, never the intention to pay back. So that's where the lawsuit comes in. She's trying to recoup some of that money, which is probably isn't going to happen. But what's mostly going to happen is this fortune teller, this gypsy healer, will be spending at least 40 months in prison, plus 3 years of supervised release. No more funny business from that psychic. But if you have an encounter with a psychic, I would love to hear it. Tell me, were they at least close? I've seen it on TV before where they go in and I've seen people explain the methods they use in order to get information from you, different body language cues, or just fish until you find something. It's a very shady business. But you know, the strange thing is, the last time we talked about this, people would call in and say, no, I live by it. The person knew things. There's no way they would have known otherwise. So I'm here to defend the psychics. Where's Miss Chloe when you need her? I know she passed a few years back. But please tell me, if you use a psychic or ever tried a psychic, what was your experience with it? You got to tell me. It's 436-7900 or 800-925-1120. An Overnight America KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. All right, well, I had a couple other things I wanted to get to tonight, and Kevin McLean's got another whole nother story to mention. And have you seen the giant Ferris wheel going up at Union Station? They got it lit up at night, and the thing's a landmark in itself. You can see that thing, you know, 200 feet. You're bound to see it from pretty far out. So maybe we'll talk about that coming up in a little bit, too. I wanted to take Larry's call, who's calling in now. And Larry called in last week. How are you, Larry?
Oh, how you doing, Ryan?
Good.
Look, I want to talk about maybe the killing going on all over the city. Maybe Chief John Hayden, I think that maybe if he stepped down, we get a new chief, maybe he can stop the killing.
Why do you think he's the problem?
Well, it probably need a new chief of police to take over, and maybe it might solve something.
Why? So I don't think John Hayden as a police chief is the problem when it comes to the crime in our city.
I know he can't stop it. I know he can't stop it. And
yeah.
I think and with the babies getting killed all over the city, I mean, we are hit about 15 babies.
That's terrible. Well, so how can we do anything if we're down on police officers?
I think we need to work together. All over the city. I think what we need to do, I'm going to meet with some of the ministers. I'm trying to meet with some of the ministers this week, and maybe we can pray. And is Del Mar Loop getting bad? The train, the buses.
Yeah.
I got so many friends drive for Metro, the train, the buses. They told me they rolling up drugs on the bus.
Oh, terrible, yeah.
Yeah, and then they got St. Louis County working with them, the city police. But with the police shortage in the city, boy, and a lot of them told me they getting ready to quit and go to Merrill Heights or Florida.
Yeah, it's the lack of support they seem to be getting. And I wanted to talk about Chief John Hayden because his plan was to look at some of the worst areas of the city, the poor areas of the city that you see a lot of the drug dealing and crime and shootings happening. So there's a higher percentage of police officers patrolling those areas that are more dangerous. And in the instance that we saw just a couple of weeks ago, Police are patrolling. It's 1 a.m. They see a suspected drug dealing in a drug dealer's area with a person around a car, which would look like a drug dealing. The police approach this person, and I'm sure you've heard this story, and it turns out he has drugs on him. So they take him out of the car, find a revolver in his pocket. He resists. They try non-lethal force with a stun gun. It didn't work. He reaches for the gun. The police end up shooting and killing this person. This is 1 a.m. Now, also, there's a 7-year-old in the car at 1 a.m. on a school night with this person. So a lot of things are going on at once. So the police are doing these things to try to crack down on these really dangerous areas where dangerous things are happening. They do everything they possibly could in order to try to clean some of these bad situations off the street. And then, even after all of that, the prosecutor and the older men and women go out there and say that it's the police's fault for harassing this person and addressing it to begin with. So I don't know how that's John Hayden's fault. I mean, I think he's doing everything he can.
The Kim Gordon, the circuit attorney, that's a personal friend of mine. Mm-hmm. We go way back. I'm a 60-year-old man, and I see it all over St. Louis. I mean, I know some of the police officers ain't right, and Kim Gardner is indicting them. And I think when you got a bad cop, that makes the other cop, the good cop, I mean, it makes them look bad. Mm-hmm. But Kim Gardner, a personal friend of mine, and I'm behind her 100%. Now, I had met the chief of police in the May Day parade, but a lot of people say he should step down all over the city. Every person I talk to. Now, I know he can't stop the killing, but they say that they want the assistant chief to take over Lorenzo, too.
Mm. I don't know what you could do even if you were to bring someone in or an outsider, because the last time when they were doing this search for the next police chief, they looked at a lot of outsiders, and they decided with Chief Hayden, someone that knew the area, was more familiar with the demographic and the geographic nature of this area, and, you know, where the places that needed more attention. So they went with someone with more experience in this area. And when he got in there, he put his plan in place. But, I mean, let's look at some things that we still haven't been able to get done in the city of St. Louis that would have helped situations that we're in today. Imagine if we had some body cameras that actually had some way to back up the claims of the officers. There'd be no discrepancies. So if there was a circuit attorney out there that was worried that the police officer did something inappropriate, and we had the body cam footage that would show the evidence is truthful, then we wouldn't have this problem. Then we would know who's at fault. I mean, why won't they get the body cams for the cameras? Why won't they invest in that? That's a very, very important tool.
I agree with you on that. But when we had Dan Eisen in there, we didn't have all this. Now, Clarence Harmon, it was worse. When he was the chief, he was the first black police chief. Of police, but when the guy retired before Harmon, Robert Sheets, we didn't have all this back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we had the crooked chief of police, Joe Mokum. Yeah, he was crooked cop.
Mm-hmm.
But we had this other black chief of police, the second one, Brian Henderson, he was good. Eisen was good.
Mm-hmm.
But see, you get the crooked police chiefs in office, and they don't do nothing. Only thing they think about their salary and taxpayer dollar, like mine, yours too.
Hmm. You think John Hayden's crooked?
I don't think he's crooked, but maybe he should have gone and retire. And they put the board should appoint a new chief of police and see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's crooked.
I don't think you're going to change the police chief and things will change in the city of St. Louis. What's the different direction? So let's say we put a different police chief. What type of agenda would you want that police chief to have in order to change the trajectory of the crime in St. Louis?
Well, we can change it. He worked with the taxpayer like me. And then we set up a meeting or something, and the ministers, all the churches. Maybe we can do something about it. I know he's been in there quite some time. He was over the turnover fire, the training. But I think he should step down and we get a new chief of police.
Yeah, he's not the problem though. I haven't heard yet.
He's not the problem.
Yeah,
I know he's not the problem.
Yeah, but you don't think he's the solution.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, but the thing with me, I have no confidence that even if there's a new police chief in there, that Kim Gardner will all of a sudden start to act differently. And if we go down this road where we're going to ignore evidence and we're going to just put this, you know, light sentencing or no sentencing for some drug crimes that we see in the city that just keep going around and around, or maybe there's someone with a gun on them and that's ignored and it doesn't matter, and they go out and commit more crimes as soon as they're out of jail or whatever. That's not going to help us. I mean, we need someone that's going to stop that cycle.
Yeah, that's what we need. But I think prayer would help.
Absolutely. There's some great organizations out there that have been hitting the streets. And I wish I could remember his name right now. It's slipping my mind. It's a Church in the Wild. Have you heard of them?
Yes, I hear of them.
Wonderful organization.
Bob, out west, he a good priest.
Well, I have to look up his name because it's slipping my mind, but he'll go out, I think it's every Thursday, into some of these really terrible areas, and he just pulls up a van and starts preaching to anyone that'll listen, drug dealers, prostitutes, you know, whatever, and he tries to go to where they are in hopes that they can change some of those hearts. Now, the people that live in those neighborhoods that are sick of this crime, too, love it.
Right.
You know, they'll come out, they'll bring a lawn chair, listen, and hope that it helps change their neighborhood. And he's actually doing it. I mean, he is someone that is on the ground doing everything he can to help. And great organizations like that do exist right now.
Right. I think we should walk the neighborhood of the most dangerous streets of drugs and try to get the people to come together and stop using drugs all over the city. You know?
Better Family Life, they do that too. They go through the city blocks, they clean them up, they help other neighbors connect with their neighbors so they know each other. They help become engaged in their own neighborhood, in their own communities.
James Clark do that too.
Yeah, James Clark. Yeah, that's with Better Family Life. He does an excellent job. That's a very valuable organization. They just got a lot of funding to help expand the work that they're doing, which I think will go a long way in the city. So there are organizations that are combating this. But it's not the only thing you need to do, and there's a lot more that needs to be done.
We need some improvement, cause outside of Chicago, I know Chicago 8 times bigger than St. Louis, but with the murder going on in Chicago, I don't see how we can be number one.
Hmm.
I have friends that have funeral homes up there, and also in Memphis it's getting bad, but it ain't bad in St. Louis.
Mm.
I have a friend down there. He's leading funeral home down there.
Yeah, that has to do with the city-county issue and the way they calculate the statistics for those different national surveys. So that plays a part into it when some of those other areas are unified. So it plays into the good areas and the bad areas together kind of equal out. And here in St. Louis, it's just one bad area is pretty much what the statistics looked at.
Right.
So that doesn't help our polling.
Yeah. I'm not going to take up your time, because I know you got other calls coming.
Yeah.
In.
All right. Hey, thank you for calling in, Larry. Good to hear from you.
Okay. Thank you. Right, bye-bye.
Okay. You know, talking about Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner, she put out an opinion piece in the St. Louis American. I want to read that for you coming up. I feel like this might be a good time to do it. 436-7900, that's the number. If you want to get in and talk about or maybe comment on anything Larry just said or I said. Also, 800-925-1120 on Overnight America KMOX. Overnight America for another couple more minutes. We'll be together. All right, so a opinion piece was written for the St. Louis American by Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner, and the headline is Why Exclude Prosecutors from the Crime Summit. We talked about this last night on the show, where Governor Parson was in town with Mayor Crewson, and there was a lot of other leaders from around the area, and the idea is we're going to come up with a bunch of ideas on how to help the crime situation in the city of St. Louis. Chief Hayden was there. You know, some people from the county, they were all there. And they get together in this room and they say, give us 10 days. We're going to cycle through all of these ideas, the ones that we think will be most effective, and we'll present a plan to you. So it should be by end of next week, something like that. You know who was not invited was Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner or Prosecutor Wesley Bell from the county. They were missing on that list. Now, Mayor Crewson mentioned that she talked to Kim Gardner ahead of time. Now, I look at this in a couple of different ways, and I see this as a very encouraging exclusion. It's encouraging to me to know that the mayor is going to work with beating this crime problem in St. Louis, not by the loose restrictions of the circuit attorney, who at times will refuse evidence or refuse cases of admitted children killers. She's not going to side with that side to think that's going to be the solution. She's looking at the police chief. She's talking to the police chief, and she's putting support towards the police. That's good. That's a big, big encouraging thing, because what I was afraid was that if there's going to be some sort of, you got to pick a side, that Mayor Crewson was going to say, well, I'm going to go with the circuit attorney on this one. I'm glad she's not doing that. Now, of course, that's not something she would ever do publicly, politically speaking. That would be terrible for her. But this is an indication that she knows one side is going to be the solution, and it's going to be supporting the police officers and implementing whatever these changes are and whatever support they can get from the state of Missouri. In this case, it could be just more of those little, they look like generators. You ever see those when you go to an open field and they got to put these like light poles up? So they're like the generator light pole deals. It looks like these, but they flash blue and red, and there are these little boxes and things they can install around the city. You may have seen some of them already around. And what they do is they listen. They're like these audio and visual cues. And they listen specifically for things that may sound like gunshots. So it instantly alerts police. Okay, we picked up a trace of a gunshot in this area instantly. So they know they can respond. Or they hear things that, you know, screaming or whatever. I don't know exactly what it could pick up. But they are very effective. So those are some ideas. Bring in the state patrol. Maybe they can help with the highways, and that way it alleviates some time for the other officers to go into some of more of the side streets. Whatever their initiatives can you do? So it sounds like Governor Parson is going to be on board with helping this. That's a good thing. They didn't like that. The circuit attorney's office wrote this op-ed, at least Kim Gardner did, and I'm going to read this to you, and I got a few things about it. It says, officials hosting the St. Louis Crime Summit for the St. Louis region on Tuesday, September 10th, did not include any elected prosecutors, despite the fact the organizers said, quote, everyone joined together to find solutions, end quote. They didn't include the two leaders elected by the people to address violent crime. To me, if she's complaining that she didn't get a seat at the table, I would use that as a wake-up call. I would use it as, here's all the other leaders in the city that are trying to do something. You're not recognized as one of them. It's not a reason for you to complain that you didn't get a seat to the table. It should be a wake-up call to realize that maybe you're the problem. So she continues in this letter, violent crime has plagued the region for decades. There is no magic bullet or one-size-fits-all solutions. Maybe she shouldn't have used that term, magic bullets, but she did. I guess that could be a little insensitive, but yet Wesley Bell and I are implementing solutions that addresses long-term violent crime, and we were not included in this most important conversation. Isn't that crazy? The idea that addressing long-term violent crime is loosen prison sentences, so essentially just decriminalize things. You know, we're going to stop prosecuting drug crimes because we think that's the way to handle things. We're going to stop prosecuting deadbeat dads because that's the way we handle things. That's not a solution to crime. That gives free rein. That gives a license to commit crime to people that are doing those crimes. It doesn't stop the crime. It just means you're not prosecuting the crime. You're not part of the solution if you're doing that. If you think that people that have, what was it? Last time I checked the street value, it was like up to $1,000 of weed or whatever on you. Or if you're a councilwoman and you think that the police are hassling just random people that are suspected of drug dealing, and the way to alleviate that is to ignore the drug dealers. If you think that's the solution, then you know what? We're going to see more of what we saw this year in St. Louis over and over and over and over again. We can't afford that. If you actually want to do something, if you actually want to see this crime addressed in a way that could be good for the city, you don't keep going down this same road. And She continues with her commentary. There is a clear and concerted effort to isolate the two reform-minded elected prosecutors in our region. Why is that? It is because we think differently about the way we should address long-term crime reduction. Is it because we hear the cries of people who want us to both cooperate with police while holding them accountable for actions that erode trust from the public? Right now, I think they highly overrate the public opinion of their offices right now. I think when they see police officers go out and get a confession from someone who said they killed an 8-year-old boy, shot accidentally or whatever it was, and they get that confession because they were trying to flee the country and they caught him before that happened, and the prosecutor says, no thanks, or in a situation where they arrest a drug dealer, what was it, like 1,000 opioid pills or something on him, $30,000 in cash, and admitted to being a drug dealer, and the prosecutor says, no thanks? I think you highly overrate the public's trust in your abilities to do your job, okay? So if you think that's what the public wants is more of this, more of we're going to let the drug dealers do their thing and we're going to try to ignore them and hopefully that they'll change their heart automatically and, you know, maybe they'll kill each other before they continue down that road. I mean, whatever you think this solution is by doing nothing, no, public's not buying it. So go ahead. You can say you got the public's support here, but I think when in the end they see that you are the problem. All right, so what's more? What else is she saying this? I want to send a clear yet strong message to the people of this great city. I stand with you and by you. I hear your calls for more accountable criminal justice system. I will continue to fight for you and for your safety. I will continue to hold people accountable regardless of their occupation and position in life. I will not waver from your commitments I made to you, and I will address violent crime as the public health crisis that it is. You know what? I don't believe her, but let's look at one thing she said that I think is worth pointing out. The line, I hear your calls for more accountable criminal justice system. That's interesting. So you're actually being investigated. You get these grand juries looking into the inappropriate things you did during the Greitens case, the witch hunt, which was the Greitens case, which you won. Sure. You got Governor Greitens to step down from office. But let's look what happened. Did you withhold evidence? Did you have a private investigator that lied? Well, he was found by the grand jury to have enough evidence to bring that case forward. Did you maybe perhaps hold on to documents you shouldn't have held on to? I don't know. Did you destroy documents? What are all these things that are lining up that they're currently investigating right now? And by the way, her current license to practice law, her law license or whatever, is also up for question because the Missouri State Bar has this case in front of the Missouri State Supreme Court, which they may decide she did not act appropriately, or as she would say, did not find herself accountable. And if she loses her law license, she's out. Governor Parson could come in, say, all right, you don't have a license. You can't sit in this position, which is required. So he gets to remove her from office and then put someone else in place. Best thing that can happen to the city. So if she wants to talk about accountability, let's talk about her office. Let's talk about her. Let's talk about how she could possibly be removed from office for lack of accountability. So don't give me this on the police side. I'm not buying it. Oh, talking about one other quick political story. This came up on KMOX.com. Steve Stenger got his order to the court yesterday on the 10th. It was hereby order that Steve Stenger, the defendant, having been sentenced by the court, is hereby ordered to surrender to the authorities in South Dakota, where his federal prison, where he's, I guess it's like a minimal security or something. Yeah, minimum security federal prison, all male inmates. That's happening at Yankton, South Dakota. So he gets that order in the mail. He has to appear by 1 p.m. on September 21st. So little over 9 days from now. 21st is a Saturday, so it's by the end of next week. So Steve Stenger's going away. It's a good sign in the county when you can hold politicians accountable. When will Kim Gardner's day come? So I think it's just a matter of time. This is Overnight America, KMOX. And welcome back. That's kind of interesting. I found this online and I thought we could play it today Everyone likes the old archived audio, and I found Paul Harvey's comments from September 11, 2001. Now, they're not as poetic as Jack Buck's speech at Busch Stadium a few days after, where they commenced their ball game here in St. Louis versus the Brewers, but it's still Paul Harvey, and I love playing Paul Harvey stuff, and just, I think last week it was his 101st birthday, would have been, so we played some great audio from the archives from Paul Harvey, but I was curious about this, and I mentioned this maybe at the end of last hour. As a radio person, you have these certain radio personalities you follow or enjoy. When I was growing up, I had my own personalities that I watched and were influential to me as a young, aspiring broadcaster. And I didn't listen to Paul Harvey until I was in college. I didn't grow up listening to his commentaries or whatnot. But on September 11th, you better believe you turned it to that person you knew and trusted on the radio. You wanted to hear what they were talking about, and a lot of people did. The ones that didn't, they wanted to hear it after the fact, and it's always the most requested audio that anyone asks. If you go back into the archives of any personality, I think the first thing people start looking for is, what did they sound like on that day? To be able to listen back to it, there's some power to it because it does take you back. And you get to look at it when your hindsight's 20/20 and wondered, okay, knowing what they knew, were they able to look at this in the right way? Here is Paul Harvey's commentary from September 11, 2001.
Hello, Americans. This is Paul Harvey. Stand by for news. By now you know, just before 9 this morning, New York time, a plane crashed into the side of the World Trade Center, exploding on impact. Minutes later, another plane crashed into the second tower and exploded. Subsequently, both towers collapsed. We were next to hear from the Pentagon that it had been hit. Suddenly, we were in an undeclared war with enemies that are already dead. Speculation is inevitable. It's very difficult to guard against an enemy whose religion teaches him that to die for his convictions is a shortcut to heaven. No presently known connection, but at the top of the list of avowed world terrorists, of course, is Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden warned 3 weeks ago that he would carry out an unprecedented attack on the United States because of our support of Israel. If somebody had a sadistic sense of humor, he might note that this date is 9/11. President Bush flew home from Florida immediately. Will be a long time sorting out and confirming details as to casualties aboard the plane and in the buildings. Any speculation is premature. Of course, the cost will be horrendous. American Airlines says it lost two airplanes this morning carrying 156 people. 50,000 people are regularly employed in those twin towers. Skyscrapers for all of our engineering cannot be made safe from crazy people in airplanes. And with any upper-level damage, the elevators are the first to go. People were immediately seen jumping from the towers before the towers collapsed. In Washington, D.C., the White House, the Capitol, and the State Department have been evacuated. The FBI, with responsibility for our nation's internal security, did have contingency plans for such as this. As evidence mounted that one or more planes had been an airliner commandeered by terrorists, all planes in the United States were grounded for the duration. Many of our airliners in flight are diverting to Canada, landing there. For several years now, America has had a terrible, terrible nightmare relating to our vulnerability to fanatics. This morning we awakened and the nightmare had come true. From this day, the American safe haven for the world will not be that anymore. J. Edgar Hoover saw it coming. It was he who said, quote, "In our nation's most vaunted tolerance for all peoples, our enemies have found our Achilles heel."
Wow. That was Paul Harvey on September 11th, 2001. Another remarkable... I started the hour talking about psychics. It's amazing how in the moment Paul Harvey can look at all of that and realize the right things to say as if he wrote it a year later. Isn't that remarkable? Thank you for listening to us here on Overnight America tonight. That'll about do it for us. You know, we'll be back again tomorrow. We're going to get a full 4 hours starting at 10 o'clock, which is always a nice night. And since it'll be right after the Democratic debates, should be wrapping up about 10 o'clock. We're going to have a couple of guests on that hour. We'll get reaction to the debates, and we'll get reaction to the debate moderators. How did they handle it? And who got the most time of everyone? So Kristen Arnold will be giving us analysis of that. Our friend Rich Rubino is going to be joining us, too. And something quite interesting, if you know the name, his name is Ryan Glesman. He is the brother-in-law of Pete Buttigieg. He's been making his rounds as of late, talking about some of the comments that Pete Buttigieg said about abortion. He's going to join us tomorrow night, too. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!